you're back at the afternoon show with Anne Forbes Cooper and Richard Roth. And our first guests today are Bob Hoven, President of the Friends of Beattie Powers Board of the Beattie Powers House in Catskill, and Sylvia Hassenkopf. I hope I pronounced that correctly, Sylvia.
Perfectly.
A noted Hudson Valley historian, a genealogist, and a columnist who will be giving a talk this Saturday, May 21st at 2 p.m. at the Beattie Powers House, entitled Slavery and the Road to Freedom in Greene County, in recognition of the 150th anniversary of the onset of the Civil War in America. But first, Bob, if I may start with you, just to give us some context here. So who were Beattie, and who were they? Who were Mr. Beattie or Mr. Powers?
First, let me thank Tom and Anne for asking Sylvia and I to join you for this conversation today. Beattie Powers Place is a structure that is Greek Revival in design and architecture. It's a significant architectural treasure, and it is significant historically, too. It was built about 1837 in Catskill on a large property that was 7 acres at the time that slopes down to the Hudson River and has full views of Olana across the river. It was owned and built by a gentleman named James Powers, who was a New York State Senator in Albany, and he used it in the summer as a gentleman's farm. Through the years, it passed into other successive owners, and then probably about 1930 passed into the hands of an interior designer from New York City named Neri Dean Beattie, hence the name Beattie and Powers. And she lived there and did a lot of work on the property for many years. And then when she died in 1991, the house was bequested to the village of Catskill and the property as a village park to be preserved for the public.
And what sort of a state was it in then? Did it need much in the way of restoration?
1991 is before my time in Catskill, but I had heard it was really in not very good repair. At the time, we had hoped that it would fall into the hands of the Greene County Historical Society, but at the time it was probably more than they could manage, and so they refused. So the Catskill Village Trustees supported it and helped restore it a bit, but also there was a group of people called the Friends of Beattie Powers that was formed, and they commenced to doing restoration.
And so how long has it been open to the public?
Ever since then, ever since 1991. And about 5 years ago, I became president of the board. We became re-energized because there was an effort afoot to have the Powers Mansion rented to the IDA of Greene County to use as offices. And people were outraged that they were going to do something like that, and they were concerned that it would be withdrawn from public use at the time. So we got together and got on our hind legs and protested. And, you know, at a village meeting where normally there's only 7 people, a few stray dogs, cats, we showed up with 250 people and got control of it, in the sense that we've been given a trusteeship to maintain it. We pay all of the bills for the interior and exterior of the house. We secured grants to do restoration. And we pay all the things like gas and lights. And it's hard to do, especially in a bad economy. But it's been really good. I mean, we started out doing concerts. We secured concerts with Bard College Conservatory 4 years ago. And so we have a full concert series, and we have a piano so we can have a wide range of concerts. And we did things like wine tastings. We've done plays by Chekhov. We've done 2 different plays by Anton Chekhov. And we've done many lectures.
And you also used to have the Food and Wine Festival there, correct, until it got too big?
That was a production. We allow nonprofits to use the space once a year for free, and the Fortnightly Club produced that, I think, 3 years, and it just got huge, mm-hmm. and then they moved down to the Catskill Point this year.
And can people just drop by and see it? Is it open to the public on a daily basis?
The park is open dawn to dusk. The house is another matter because it has precious antiques inside, but we generally have on the average of 1 to 2 events per month, and people are invited to come in at that time.
Where is it exactly? How do you get to it?
Well, it's kind of tricky in a way. I lived in Catskill for 3 years and drove past it and never knew what it was until it was a snowstorm one day and I saw this big space back there, you know, and it was like really beautiful. It's on Prospect Avenue at Bridge Street. So if you go to the Rip Van Winkle Bridge coming across from Hudson, you make a left on Spring Street and you go all the way to the end. And you make a left again on Bridge Street, and it's right before you, like one block up. Or if you're coming from the opposite direction, you would just reverse those directions.
So it's really like a hidden gem in the heart of Catskill.
It sits back from the road, so it's kind of hard to just see. Mm. So you can drive within the park, but you can walk also. And it's 6.5 acres, and it's a little gem that a lot of people just don't know about.
And how is it funded?
It's funded all by the Friends of BD Powers. We charge no admission for any of our productions. All the lectures, all the concerts, all the demonstrations are all free. We decided several years ago that it should be that way, that we should do this as part of our mission to enlighten and sustain to sustain the property and preserve it, but also for the enlightenment and enrichment of the population in Catskill. So we do not charge for things. However, in order for us to do all of this, we certainly welcome donations. We also do one event per year that's our June fundraiser dinner, which is a big ticket number. We charge $150 for it, and every dime from that dinner sustains us pretty much for the year.
And what sort of programs do you have coming up over this summer?
The summer is usually kind of quiet. We usually do things in the fall and winter. It's a little hot in the house generally in the summertime because we don't have the amenities of air conditioning. Mm-hmm. But we do have Sylvia coming up next Saturday, and we'll probably do two things in the summer in addition to our fundraiser, which is June 11th. Then in the fall, we start kicking up right again. October 1st is the fall potluck luncheon, and then the Bard series starts right in.
And what's the first program in the Bard series?
The first program in the Bard series will be the vocal department, students of Dawn Upshaw, who's the head of the voice department at Bard. And she is also a noted Metropolitan Opera soprano. And by the way, if you saw the Times today, Bard College received a $60 million grant from George Soros.
We just read that in the news. I knew. I thought it was fantastic.
It's fantastic. That's how our funding goes. We also, we've gotten grants. It's, you know, grants are hard to get, and they take time to secure and to write. But we did get a $60,000 grant 4 years ago, which enabled us to really restore the exterior. The inside is not in bad shape. It's really in good shape. There's minor things to do. We'd love to do some electrical upgrade, but generally that takes care of it. And then we have people that, you know, give us money sometimes to do things like pay for things like Sylvia's lectures or to help endow the concert series.
Okay, now before I go on to grill Sylvia, is there anything else you'd like to add that I haven't asked
no
you?
No doubt I'll probably interrupt her to say something.
Okay, Richard, do you have anything else you want to ask Paul?
No, I guess we can, if we think of anything, we'll come back to Paul.
By all means.
So we'll just switch the mics over here. So welcome, Sylvia. Why are you interested in this subject? And just once again, I'll read the title. You're going to be giving a talk this Saturday called Slavery and the Road to Freedom in Greene County. So what interested you in that topic?
Well, I've been a genealogist and a historian here in Greene County for almost 15 years, although I've been doing genealogy for well over 20 years. But I'm originally from Canada. So we have a different kind of mindset, perspective on history, coming from Canada and a British tradition. So when I moved down to the States and lovely Cairo, I got really interested in American history. And not long after arriving, I started a website called Tracing Your Roots in Greene County. It's a free website that people can utilize. Has almost 3,000 pages of original material, from church records to cemetery records to deeds, what have you. And as time has gone on, I've kind of developed specific interests and questions in my mind about our history of mm-hmm. Greene County. And as time went on, slavery became something that just kind of was niggling in the back of my mind. And I was asking myself, like, what was it like here in Greene County? You know, was it the same as it was in the South? Was the northern states, the way they treated slaves, the way slavery unfolded and finally ceased, was that different than what happened in the South? And this year being the 150th anniversary of the onset of the Civil War, and some people argue this with me, but a large part of the reason that we went to war was because of the independent feeling of the southern states to maintain their slavery traditions. And the North had already long let go of those traditions, but a lot of people didn't realize that. And I thought this would be a really fascinating topic to bring up at this time, and to share what my journey, my discovery of knowledge and information and just ideas, and to share that with people that would be interested in that journey.
And can you tell us any of the highlights or any of the things that you discovered?
Yes, I don't want to give too much away,
right,
of course.
Absolutely not.
but really, the way I see slavery in Greene County, it's much larger. It's understanding why slavery started to begin with. And certainly for that, we need to go back to the Dutch period. Why did, you know, the Dutch, you know, bring slaves into New Amsterdam and New Netherlands at large? The British phase, which started in 1664, were they different than the Dutch? Did they perceive slavery in a different way? Did they treat slaves in a different manner? That will be something I'll be diving into. And then there's the post-revolutionary period, you know, when all of a sudden here we are Americans. And what did that mean to the average slave, and how did that impact their day-to-day life? And certainly there is that period when they became free, you know, and that date was in the early 1800s.
Well, now, there were a number of places in Berkshire County that mm-hmm. were stations on the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. Did that extend as far west as Greene County?
That's an interesting topic almost all by itself. I was talking to probably the gentleman from Albany, who is one of the gurus of the Underground Railroad system, just recently, and I explored that concept with him, because I was always puzzled about why we would need to have an in-depth Underground Railroad system in this far north when, you know, the average African-American was free in 1827. So why would you need to furtively hide people, you know, move them from spot to spot, if they could just walk amongst, you know, the general population, and most people would not recognize one person from another, and say, oh, you're a slave and you're not a slave, because it wasn't like being black meant that you were a slave anymore. So we've had that kind of interesting discussion, and I'm not so convinced that we needed to have, you know, these very intricate systems. Yes, we needed to get people north, and there were safe houses to, you know, to feed them and house fleeing slaves, but the need to be furtive may not have been as great as our imaginations would like to think.
Now, would Thomas Cole, his household, have had slaves, or his
yes,
uncle?
Yes, they did. Yes.
Yeah, because he married into his wife's.
Yes. Thomas Cole, of course, married Mariah Bartow,
right,
who was the niece of Thomas Thompson, who built Cedar Grove. And interestingly enough, I do have some slaves.
Uncle Sandy, right? Isn't
well, Uncle
famous?
Sandy was Thomas's brother.
Ah, okay.
See, Thomas built the house from a fortune that he built down in English Guyana. And, of course, he had his mulatto mistress down there and children of his own. And when he left there and came back to America, built the house, Cedar Grove. And when he died, I think it was in 1821, Sandy Thompson inherited the home. And with that, his four young orphaned nieces who grew up there. And they had their slaves, yes. And we will be talking about that on Saturday.
All right. Fascinating subject, isn't it?
Slavery was really very much an idea of privilege and status. You know, especially in Greene County, which is I'm trying to focus a lot of the talk on how is it in Greene County, because we were a largely agricultural community with some very strong commercial activities along the river. But for the most part, if you think of Greene County, it was very much an agrarian society, you know, until the 1800s.
When you say status, you mean it was a status symbol to own slaves?
That's correct. Wow. And only people with wealth, a certain level of wealth, could really afford to have, you know, the butler or the coach driver or, you know, the cook or the nanny. Now, going back to the Dutch tradition, however, there were some of the large Dutch landholders who had slaves, but nothing like what the South was like, in my opinion.
And what about Columbia County? Do you look at that at all, or are you just focusing on Greene?
I'm focusing mostly on Greene County at this point, because each county really, I think, had unique features, let's put it that way, to how they ran, you know, their individual systems. Although I would imagine that Columbia would not be all that much different than Greene County, because they were also a very agrarian society, very much founded upon the Palatines and their large, you know, holdings, although for the most part it was the Rensselaerwyck as well as Livingston Manors here. We did have our leasehold system, so we didn't have as many slaves over here because of those large manorial systems as we did in Greene.
Was the European settlement about the same time in Greene County as Columbia County? I mean, late 17th century?
Yes, the first settler in Greene County would have been Peter Bronk, 1663. You know, he came down, had acquired the patent for the land up in Coxsackie area, and started, you know, creating his farm. You know, it became very large. Then the Hollenbecks and the Holtellings, these are the old Dutch families that were living up in Albany at the time, Beaverwijk, and then became Albany. And they were buying the patents and moving down. The same thing was happening on the other side, but remember, we had the manor of Rensselaerwyck, which was one of the patroon manorial estates. So that particular land, as well as the Livingston Manor, was really mostly leasehold systems. So the farmers that were living there had to provide signed leases for the most part, had to provide rents and so on and so forth. They didn't have the monies to create, you know, like the slavery system. And, you know, they were settled concurrently but in a different way because of, we had to freehold versus, you know, being obliged to, you know, a landowner.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a fascinating talk. Is there anything else that you'd like to add in addition to what we've discussed?
I can't think of anything more than if you have an interest in history, if you have an interest in what slavery was like, what was the road to freedom for the average African-American, as, you know, the whole concept and philosophy of what freedom meant unfolded, especially after the Revolutionary War, where we were essentially fighting for freedom at that time. And how could you differentiate between a white person and a black person became really the fundamental debate of the time, and which really led to the freedom of the slaves in the North for the most part. This is the time to come in and find out what it's all about, and we're going to have lots of talk and lots of discussion.
And I understand the last time you gave a speech, it was sold out, so people should reserve quickly. And Bob, how do they reserve a seat?
Well, I should stress, it's when we say sold out, it means you reserve a seat.
Okay, right.
You don't have to pay for it. It's free. But it's good to reserve a seat, because we expect that this will be well attended. The last time Sylvia did a lecture, we were totally full. And the space in BD Powers is one of those classic houses that has columns all over and porches, which makes it look very large, but it's deceptive. When you get inside, it's much smaller. But I would give you my email, and you can email me directly if you'd like to secure a reservation. And it is rhovinvicky@gmail.com. So it looks like rhovininc@gmail.com. And I would suggest you do it in the next day or so, because we have already a number of people reserved.
And once again, that's being held this Saturday, May 21st at 2 p.m. at the BT Powers House in Catskill. And it's a talk by Sylvia Hassenkopf and noted Hudson Valley historian. and it's entitled Slavery and the Road to Freedom in Greene County. And thank you so very much for being on the afternoon show. And Bob is just dying to get another word in here.
It's like a bad cousin comes in, or a relative puts their foot in the door. There's just one last plug I need to do. And that is that if you want to find out what's going on at BD Powers, you should look at our blog spot. Because our blog shows everything in detail of what's going on and what's occurred through the last year. And it is Friends, with an S, Friends of Beatty, spelled B-A-T-T-I-E, place, sorry, Friends of Beatty Powers Place blogspot. And you'll find out everything there. Thank you,
okay,
Anne.
Thank you. And once again, Sylvia and Bob, thanks for being on the afternoon show. We're now going to jump to a song, aren't we, Tom?
I hear something saying,